to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Some Sounds of Arizona. Let's begin today's reading with a feature entitled Auburn Stays at Number 1 in the Associated Press Top 25 poll for the sixth straight week. Auburn's win at Alabama confirmed that the Tigers would keep the number 1 ranking in the Associated Press Top 25 Men's College Basketball poll for a sixth consecutive week. The Tigers, who are now 23 wins and 2 losses, received 59 out of 60 first-place votes in Monday's poll, reclaiming nearly all of the support lost when they fell at home to Florida on February the 8th. Auburn had been the unanimous number 1 for 3 straight weeks before that loss, but remained at the top this past week despite seeing nearly half of those first-place votes go primarily to Alabama, with a few to Florida and Tennessee. But the Tigers won Saturday in a number 1 versus number 2 road matchup against the rival Crimson Tide, hours after the committee that will choose the 68-team field for the NCAA tournament put Auburn as its number 1 overall seed in its preliminary rankings. The two teams that beat the Tigers sit right behind them. Florida and Duke were tied for third last week, and the Gators inched past the Blue Devils to break that tie and take the number 2 spot, while claiming the remaining first-place vote. Alabama fell to number 4, followed by Houston, Tennessee, Texas A&M, with its highest ranking since December of 2017. Then Iowa State, Texas Tech, and St. John's to round out the top 10. Of that group, the Red Raiders represented the only change from this past week's set of teams, climbing 3 spots to replace Purdue for their first top 10 appearance in 3 years. Grant McCaslin's squad, which has lost just twice since the start of 2025, was unranked until cracking the poll at number 22 on January the 27th. Michigan had the week's biggest jump among ranked teams, climbing 8 spots to number 12 after beating Purdue this past week and pushing its win streak to 6 games. Number 15, Missouri, jumped 6 spots, while number 11, Wisconsin, number 18, Clemson, and number 20, Maryland, each rose 5 spots. In all, 12 teams moved up from their position this past week. Memphis took the biggest tumble of the week, falling 8 spots to number 22 after its overtime loss at Wichita State, ending an 8-game winning streak. Number 13, Purdue, number 19, Arizona, and number 23, Kansas, the preseason number 1 ranked team, all fell 6 spots, while number 24, Mississippi, tumbled 5 spots. 10 teams fell from this past week's poll. Number 25, Louisville, was the week's lone new addition, returning to the poll for the second time after a 2-week stint in January. First-year coach Pat Kelsey has guided the program to its first 20-win season since the 2019-2020 season, with the Cardinals having lost just once since mid-December. Creighton, number 24, fell out of the rankings for the second time this season. The Blue Jays were ranked for the first 4 weeks, then returned this past week for what turned out to be just a one-week stay. The Southeastern Conference had a national best 9 teams, including 3 of the top 4 and 5 of the top 10. The Big 12 and the Big 10 each had 5 teams, though the Big 12 had 3 in the top 10, while the highest-ranked Big 10 team checked in at number 11. The Atlantic Coast Conference had 3 teams in the top 25, followed by the Big East with 2, and the American Athletic Conference with 1. And again, that feature entitled Auburn stays at number 1 in the AP Top 25 for the 6th straight week. And from men's basketball news, let's look at women's basketball news. The next headline reads, Notre Dame tops the Associated Press women's poll for the first time since 2019. And this feature comes from the ESPN Wire. Notre Dame is the new number 1 in the Associated Press Top 25 Women's Basketball poll, ascending to the top spot Monday for the first time since January 21, 2019. The Fighting Irish replaced UCLA, which lost its first game of the season last week, falling to rival USC 71-60. It's definitely an honor to be the nation's top team, but we're just focused on getting better every day, Notre Dame coach Neil Ivey said. The Irish, who received 16 first-place votes from a 30-member national media panel, faced number 11 Duke on Monday night. The University of Texas moved up to second for its best ranking since 2017. The Longhorns, who garnered 8 first-place ballots, became the first team to beat 3 straight top 10 teams since the year 2004. UCLA had been number 1 for 12 straight weeks after beating South Carolina in late November. UCLA fell to 3rd and received the other 6 first-place votes. USC moved up to 4th, and UConn was 5th after routing then number 4 South Carolina 87-58 on Sunday. The Gamecocks, who saw their 71-game home winning streak end, fell to 6th. LSU and Ohio State were next. North Carolina climbed up 3 spots to number 9 for its highest ranking in 3 seasons after beating NC State 66-65 on Sunday, and TCU was 10th in the rankings. Illinois re-entered the poll this week at number 25 after beating Penn State and Nebraska. The Illini spent the first few weeks of the season ranked. Florida State fell out of the rankings after losing to Louisville and edging Miami. And it was a tough week for Kentucky. 1 week after earning its best ranking in a decade, Kentucky fell 6 spots to number 14. The Wildcats lost games to Ole Miss and Texas before beating Georgia. The Southeastern Conference still reigns with 7 ranked teams. The Big Ten has 6 teams, while the ACC and the Big 12 each have 5. The Big East has 2. With a month left till the start of the NCAA tournament, the selection committee revealed the top 16 teams to that point on Sunday. UCLA, South Carolina, Texas, and Notre Dame were the number 1 seeds. The reveal came before South Carolina's loss. For games of the week, number 1 Notre Dame will be at number 13 North Carolina State on Sunday. The Irish currently have a 2-game lead in the ACC race over the Wolfpack. 5 teams are within 2 games of second place. Number 17 West Virginia will be at number 10 TCU next Sunday. 2 of the top teams in the Big 12 square off as the Horned Frogs hope to remain at the top of the conference standings. And again, that feature entitled Notre Dame Tops the Associated Press Women's Poll for the first time since 2019. And in other news off the ESPN wire, the headline reads, Agent says Fever's Caitlin Clark, WNBA players deserve higher pay. And this feature written by Michelle Steele of ESPN. It is not possible to fully compensate Indiana Fever star Caitlin Clark for what she has meant to the WNBA, her agent Aaron Kane told ESPN. Will Caitlin Clark ever be paid by the WNBA what she's really worth to that league? I don't think that's possible, said Kane, who also represents WNBA Defensive Player of the Year, Nafisa Collier, and a host of other prominent athletes for XL Sports Management. Quote, she's part of a larger body. They all need to be paid more. She should be recognized for what she has done and for what she has brought to the league from an economic standpoint. It's as simple as that, unquote. Clark enters her second season with the Fever after breaking the league's assist record as a rookie. She and the rest of a star-studded rookie class helped drive the WNBA's most watched regular season in 24 years and its highest attendance in more than 20 years. An economist at Indiana University, interviewed by the Indianapolis Star recently, calculated that Clark was responsible for $36 million in economic impact to the city of Indianapolis and almost 27% of the league's economic activity for the 2024 season, including attendance, merchandise sales, and television. Clark's salary is expected to be just over $78,000 for the 2025 season. WNBA salaries are collectively bargained and range from roughly $64,000 to $240,000 for a player on a super maximum contract. The Women's National Basketball Players Association opted out of its current CBA last October with the prospect of a work stoppage if a new deal isn't reached by the end of the 2025 season. The union said at the time that players are seeking a, quote, business model that reflects their true value, encompassing higher salaries, unquote, among other benefits. The most important thing always has been getting WNBA players paid for what they do on the court, Kane said. I am very, very hopeful for this CBA negotiation that it will be progressive and move the line forward a lot, unquote. Upstart Women's League, Unrivaled, which wraps up its first season in mid-March, currently pays its players an average salary of more than $220,000 in addition to an equity stake in the league. Kane says that she thinks that there will be more equity for women athletes in the future, quote, in the leagues that they're continuing to participate in and play in and build, unquote. And again, that feature entitled Agent Says Fever's Caitlin Clark and WNBA Players Deserve Higher Pay, written by Michelle Steele, ESPN sports writer. And from basketball news, let's turn now to some baseball news. Headline reads, Angels Mike Trout moving from center field to right field. And this short feature, written by Alden Gonzalez of ESPN, Dateline, Tempe, Arizona. Mike Trout arrived at spring training on Sunday and took part in a meeting with the Los Angeles Angels coaches, during which they determined the three-time MVP would move from center field to right field in an effort to preserve his body and keep him healthy. Trout, now age 33, is seemingly on board. I knew it was coming, Trout said before the team's first full squad workout on Monday. I just want to be on the field, unquote. Trout has spent his first 14 years as a dynamic center fielder, never winning a gold glove, but continually turning in spectacular highlight reel catches while establishing himself as one of the sport's most dangerous offensive players. Injuries, however, have limited him to 266 of a potential 648 games over the last four seasons. Along the way, there was a calf strain that kept him out for the final 4.5 months in 2021. Back spasms that limited him to 119 games in 2022. A fractured bone in his wrist that sidelined him for almost the entirety of the last 3 months in 2023. And a torn meniscus in his knee that popped up in late April of 2024 and kept him out the rest of the season. Trout was told that he might still see some time in center field and will mix in some starts at designated hitter to get off his feet, but right field will be his primary position moving forward. The switch leaves the left-handed hitting Mickey Moniak and the right-handed hitting Joe Adell as the team's center fielders. It's going to be fun, Trout said of the new position. I'll enjoy it. Like I told them, I'm going to go out there and just be as comfortable as I can. If I need to get early work just to work on some things and get more comfortable, I'll do that, unquote. Trout made some corner outfield starts during his first three seasons in the majors, mostly in left field, because the Angels employed a superior defender in Peter Bougeau. But Trout has played exclusively center field over the last 11 seasons. Only 121 of his 12,410 career innings in the outfield have come in right field. He hopes to soon seek advice from Torrey Hunter, who won 9 gold gloves in center field before also transitioning to right field in his age 33 season in the year 2009. I don't think it's going to be a crazy transition, Trout said. If it can save my legs a little bit, I'll do it, unquote. Trout said he's fully recovered from the left knee issues that robbed him of another season last year, reporting that his body feels lighter and faster. He vowed to continue to be aggressive on the bases when the situation calls for it, but hopes that right field will limit the quote-unquote crazy plays that might make him more susceptible to injuries. My focus was just getting me back, Trout said. That's the biggest thing. The last few years have been tough, unquote. Trout was undoubtedly the best player in the game through the 2010s, slashing a .422 on base percentage and a .587 slugging percentage with 286 home runs and 196 stolen bases while finishing within the top two in American League MVP voting in 7 out of 8 seasons. He compiled 70.5 Fangraphs wins above replacement during that stretch from 2012 to 2019, by far the most in the majors. His offensive numbers have remained good since. Trout has a 958 OPS since the year 2020, but a litany of injuries have sapped his availability. While NBA Network released its ranking of the sport's 100 best players, Trout ranked 39th. "Yeah, I saw that," Trout said with a grin. "They're going off the last couple of years. I haven't been out there, so that's their ranking. I know where I stand," unquote. And again, that short feature, Angels' Mike Trout moving from center field to right field, written by Alden Gonzalez of ESPN Sports. And in another short sports feature for baseball, headline reads, Yankees' Giancarlo Stanton hasn't swung the bat in 3 to 4 weeks. This is an Associated Press release starting, New York Yankees slugger Giancarlo Stanton hasn't swung a bat in 3 or 4 weeks, and isn't sure whether he'll be ready for opening day because of painful tendonitis in both elbows. Speaking Monday before the team's first full squad workout, the 5-time All-Star revealed that he played in pain for much of last season as he helped the Yankees reach the World Series for the first time since 2009. Quote, "Tennis elbow, or whatever they call it, is tears in the tendon, so it's not when did it feel good, when did it feel bad. There's always the pain level there, and you got to deal with that. So yeah, it's just the wisest point to give time right now," unquote, Stanton said. He wouldn't guess whether playing in the American League Champions March 27th opener against Milwaukee is realistic. Quote, "Definitely behind, but I mean, that's just a matter of being ready for a full go today as opposed to in a little bit. So we have 5 or 6 weeks here. It'll be a good ramp up from there," he said. "We'll see how that goes," unquote. Stanton, who turned 35 in November, said that he felt the pain for most of last year. "Definitely not just soreness. It's a management thing," he said. Stanton hit .233 with 27 homers and 72 RBIs while playing 114 games last year, his season interrupted by a strained left hamstring that sidelined him between June 22nd and July 29th. Stanton batted .273 with 7 homers and 16 RBIs in the postseason. And in other baseball news, this headline reads, the Red Sox Rafael Devers will not cede third base after the Alex Bregman signing. And this is an ESPN News Service, Dateline Fort Myers, Florida. The Red Sox ballyhooed signing of Alex Bregman was met with considerable resistance Monday when Rafael Devers said that he would not cede third base. Devers, a 3-time All-Star, has played the hot corner for Boston since 2017 and himself received a major deal just 2 years ago. "Third base is my position," Devers said through an interpreter. "It's what I play. I don't know what their plans are. We had a conversation, and I made it clear on what my desires were. "Whatever happens from here, I don't know," unquote. When asked whether he would be willing to become a designated hitter, Devers said no without waiting for his interpreter to relay the question. The Red Sox signed Bregman on Saturday to a 3-year, $120 million contract that includes a $5 million signing bonus. A 2-time All-Star, Bregman, who had played third base for the Houston Astros since the year 2020, has hit more than 20 home runs each of the past 3 seasons. Landing Bregman, who won his first Gold Glove Award last season, was a key, the Boston Red Sox hope, to ending a stretch in which Boston has missed the playoffs 5 of the past 6 years. Devers signed an 11-year, $331 million contract in January of 2021 and has been even more productive in recent seasons than the 30-year-old Bregman. Devers hit 28 home runs and drove in 83 runs last season despite playing just 138 games because of an assortment of injuries. The year before, he had 33 homers and 100 RBIs while playing in 153 games. That production and the financial investment by the Red Sox could give Devers some leverage in his push to stay at third. Devers said that he talked to Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow and manager Alex Cora on Friday and was caught off guard by discussions about the topic. "I'm someone that believes in people's word," Devers said on Monday. "I take it to heart. And yeah, it was very surprising that they would suggest that. I've known that this is a business. I know that each side is going to do what is best for them and what is most comfortable for them. I don't think that was the right way to do business," unquote. Cora noted that Devers was very vocal last year about how the club needed to improve. Quote, "The decisions that are going to be made here about roster construction and about what we're going to do in the future, we're going to make sure that we have the best team possible out there," Cora said. "Devers has a lot of pride. We know that. He feels like he's a third baseman. He's going to work out as a third baseman, and then we'll make decisions accordingly. I think here it's not about Bregman or Devers or Cora. It's about the Red Sox. Whatever decision we make is for the benefit of the team," unquote. Cora said that Bregman would wind up at second or third base and Devers at third or DH. If Kristen Campbell, ESPN's number 26 prospect, breaks camp with the team, he could play second base and Bregman third while Devers shifts to designated hitter. Should the Red Sox keep Campbell at AAA for more seasoning, Bregman would likely slot in as Boston's full-time second baseman. "There's competition here," Cora said. "I think flexibility and versatility are huge for us," unquote. And again, that short feature entitled, "Red Sox Rafael Devers will not cede third base after the Alex Bregman signing." And in one more Major League Baseball feature, headline reads, "Judge disagrees with Soto on the Mets having the best shot to win." And this is also a feature brought to us by ESPN News Services, Dateline Tampa, Florida. Aaron Judge wasn't that surprised by Juan Soto's decision to sign with the crosstown New York Mets, but disagreed with his former teammate about which team is in a better spot to compete. Soto passed on a competitive offer from the Yankees in favor of a 15-year, $765 million deal with the Mets this winter, a decision that the superstar made in part due to a belief that the Mets gave him the best chance to win over the next 15 years. Judge, who won American League MVP batting behind Soto and helped the Yankees reach the World Series, disagreed. Quote, "That's his opinion. He can say what he wants. I definitely disagree with him," Judge said. "He's going to be in a great spot. It's going to be great having him in the town. We're going to be battling back and forth for quite a few years," unquote. Judge, speaking to reporters Monday following his first spring training workout, also said that he was happy for Soto and that he wasn't shocked by the decision. Quote, "I wasn't too surprised by it. I think that's where he wanted to be. I think that's where it is best for him and his family," Judge said. "He's got a pretty nice deal over there. I mean, you can't say no to that. But I'm happy for you," unquote. Judge also addressed the birth last month of his daughter, Nora Rose, saying that he feels extra motivation to play well this year. Quote, "Having the chance to have her grow up and watch me do what I love, if there's any way I can inspire her through playing this game to do something special, that's going to be pretty cool," unquote, the Yankees captain said. "I'm getting older," added Judge, who turns 33 in April. "I don't want to be the old man here in a couple of years, so I got to stay on top of my game. So she's definitely going to motivate me, definitely keep me on my toes, and it's going to be a fun couple of years, that's for sure," unquote. And again, that short feature, Judge disagrees with Soto on the Mets having the best shot to win, by ESPN News Services. And from baseball news, let's turn now to some basketball news. Next headline reads, NBA All-Star 2025. New format draws mixed reviews. What's next? And this feature written by Tim Bontemps of ESPN. Dateline San Francisco. After last year's NBA All-Star Game did a collective face plant in Indianapolis, the NBA got together with its players, including one of its standard bearers in Steph Curry, to figure out what it could do to improve the league's signature mid-season showcase. The result was a reimagined format, one Curry played a part in creating, that turned one 48-minute game between two teams into three shorter games featuring four teams, culminating with All-Star MVP Curry and Team Shaq routing Team Chuck 41-25 in the championship. So it was fitting that on a weekend that wound up being as much about celebrating Curry's legendary career with the Golden State Warriors as it was with anything else, it was Curry who was asked whether the format he helped create had worked and what exactly should this event look like. "We needed the change," said Curry, referring to last year's game that featured nearly 400 combined points. Quote, "We needed some new life, new juice in the game. Something kind of unexpected. The way people consume basketball is different. It's not going to look like it used to, but it can still be fun for everybody. I had fun. Our team had fun. That's kind of all that matters," unquote. Curry had plenty of fun when he buried a half-court shot during the final Sunday night and then immediately beelined his way to the other end of the court to find rapper and fellow Bay Area icon missed a FAB to celebrate. Overall, there were fewer moments of completely lethargic play on the court than previous editions, and even multiple notable defensive plays, including blocks at the rim by Jaren Jackson Jr. and Victor Wembanyama. But at the end of the night, in what has become a tradition for how NBA All-Star Weekend has gone in recent years, there was far from a consensus about how the night played out and where things should go from here. I think maybe we should focus on some other things than All-Star, Denver Nuggets center Nikola Jokic said. I think it's always going to be like this, so we should accept it, unquote. The entire discussion around the All-Star game over the past several seasons could be distilled down into one brief interaction that the league's reigning most valuable player had with reporters Saturday during his media availability. When Jokic was asked about Charles Barkley picking him first as part of TNT's Inside the NBA draft for the 3 8-man All-Star rosters earlier this month, Jokic smiled and said, "I think I'm not built for this game, for this kind of game," unquote. Minutes later, Jokic was asked what he actually meant. Quote, "I think that's not a question for me, my friend," he said, another smile forming on his face as he spoke. "If you want my opinion, I cannot give you because I think it's not going to be nice," unquote. If Jokic, a 3-time MVP averaging a triple-double while shooting close to 60% from the field and 45% from three-point range, isn't a fit for the All-Star game, then who is? That's precisely what the NBA set out to try to fix in shifting to this 3-game mini-tournament, with each game being played to a target score of 40 points. Sunday's games were relatively competitive, more so than in recent seasons at least, dating back to the last truly competitive one, the 2020 All-Star Game in Chicago, which came a few weeks after the death of Kobe Bryant and was played with an edge that the Hall of Famer would have been proud of. And while this night didn't have anything resembling that, the consensus was the event had been improved. "I think it was a good step in the right direction to reinvigorate the game in some way," Curry said. "And then you tinker with it again next year," unquote. I think we're starting to see All-Star Weekend and the competitive nature in the game starting to creep back in, Kevin Durant said. "I think it was solid tonight. I felt like guys were trying to play hard," unquote. At the same time, not much basketball was played. Sunday night featured several extended breaks in the action. Among them, a shooting competition after the first game that involved Milwaukee Bucks All-Star guard Damian Lillard. And then there was the ceremony celebrating TNT's 40-year relationship with the NBA that is coming to an end after this season, a 20-minute pause in play that none of the players seemed to know was coming. Quote, "I think the toughest part was when they stopped the game to do the presentation while we were kind of halfway through it," Celtics star Jason Tatum said. "It was kind of tough to get back into the game after that," unquote. The inclusion of the winners of the Rising Stars Challenge, a tournament on Friday night featuring first and second-year players, as part of the All-Star game on Sunday night, drew its own round of criticism. Warriors player Draymond Green, taking part in TNT's broadcast of the event, declared that the new format was a quote-unquote zero on a 1 to 10 scale, and it sucks. For Team Chuck, which beat Team Kenny to open the night, there was over an hour between games. It was kind of tough, Donovan Mitchell said of the way that the night played out. I think at the beginning you have the energy, the adrenaline. You're going, and then you sit for 30 to 45 minutes. That was tough, to be honest with you. It's a work in progress, unquote. Now that this All-Star weekend is over, and the game will be held at the L.A. Clippers' new arena in Inglewood, California next year, one question will be on everybody's mind. What will happen to the All-Star game now? As usual, there were many possible answers. Curry wasn't the only one who lauded the new format. Cleveland Cavaliers coach Kenny Atkinson, Curry's coach in the game, thought it worked too. I liked it, Atkinson said. It is much better. It wasn't a layup drill, unquote. Atkinson's emerging star big man, Evan Mobley, liked it too. Quote, honestly, it was pretty fun out there, Mobley said. I feel like it was a little more competitive. I feel like if the game was a little closer, it would probably be even more competitive, but it was a different game. But I feel like as it keeps going, I think it's going to be a good thing for the league, unquote. Others disagreed. Both Tyler Herro and Darius Garland, first and second-time All-Stars, respectively, said that they thought the game was over almost before it started and would prefer to go back to the traditional East-West format. But who am I to say, Garland told ESPN with a laugh. I'm a two-time All-Star, so I ain't not got no say in that, unquote. One thing virtually everyone agreed on, though, was that when NBC takes the baton next year as the game's new broadcast partner, there needs to be far fewer stoppages in the action. I feel like the fans want to see us playing more, Trey Young said, rather than just some little shows in between breaks, unquote. Another topic that came up repeatedly over the course of the weekend was the idea of having a Team USA versus the world format. While sources said that there was no straight directive from the NBA on how the teams would be drafted by Barkley and his fellow TNT analyst Shaquille O'Neal and Kenny Smith, ideas were discussed on how to divvy up the stars. The fact that one of the teams, Chuck's global stars, included seven international players was emblematic of that. A move to such a format could create more issues. The All-Star Game features just 24 players, creating plenty of arguments about what stars are being slighted and left out of the competition. Going to 12 international and 12 American players would only exacerbate those issues and leave out even more deserving candidates. But that didn't stop some, including both Wembanyama and Giannis Antetokounmpo, from endorsing the idea. I would love that, Antetokounmpo said before the game, which he didn't play in because of a calf injury. Quote, I think that would be the most interesting and most exciting format. I would love that. For sure, I'd take pride in that. Unquote. My opinion is that it's more purposeful, Wembanyama said on Saturday. There's more pride in it, more stakes. Unquote. Moving forward, the NBA hopes for increased pride and stakes in this event will rest on Wembanyama and his 7-foot-4-inch frame. With LeBron James sitting out the game because of foot and ankle discomfort ending his streak of 20 consecutive All-Star starts, Wembanyama's own All-Star streak began. And after declaring that he would play the game with a purpose, he went out and did just that, including one sequence in the first game in which he had a post-up dunk, a block, and then started a fast break, ending in another dunk, this time by Alperen Sengun. He took it serious, Curry said. He was playing hard. He was showing his unique skill set all across the board. You make the game what you want it, and everybody has a choice to do that, unquote. And again, that feature entitled NBA All-Star 2025. New format draws mixed reviews. What's next? Written by ESPN writer Tom Bontemps. And in another NBA feature, this one's entitled Steph Curry Leads OGs to the Title and Wins the All-Star Game MVP. And this feature written by Dave McMahon of ESPN, Dateline San Francisco. The NBA's refreshed All-Star Game format finished with a familiar result for Golden State Warriors star Steph Curry, being presented with the Kobe Bryant Trophy as the All-Star MVP. Curry scored 12 points in Team OG's 41-25 victory Sunday in the first 40 finale against the Global Stars to win the league's new round-robin tournament to cap off the festivities. With Team OGs coached by Cleveland's Kenny Atkinson with Shaquille O'Neal as their general manager up 23-15 in the championship game, Curry showed off his otherworldly shooting range by hitting a three from half court. It put his group up by double digits and ignited the Chase Center crowd, which cheered on their hometown star. With no clear-cut MVP for the night until Curry's half-court heave, the guard's teammates kept feeding him the ball, encouraging the league's all-time three-point leader to keep shooting, and he delivered two more threes to give his team an overwhelming 39-21 lead. Jason Tatum finished it off with a dunk to hit the target score and bring his scoring total to 15 points. It was one of those little flurries, just having fun, Curry said of his three-point barrage. The half-court shot, I was going to take one at some point. Jokic was picking me up at half court, which was hilarious, unquote. And the All-Star Game, which recently had been become a bit of a joke, with both teams combining to score 397 points in Indianapolis last year in a contest devoid of much competitive spirit, inched closer back towards respectability. I think it was a good step in the right direction to reinvigorate the game in some way, Curry said of the format, which split the 12 Eastern Conference and 12 Western Conference All-Stars into teams of eight, going against a fourth team comprising eight first- and second-year players who won the Rising Stars game on Friday night. Curry received 12 of the 14 votes for MVP, with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Tatum receiving one apiece. It was the second All-Star MVP of Curry's career. He won it in Cleveland in 2022, scoring 50 points to earn Team LeBron a 163-160 victory over Team Durant. Curry acknowledged the new structure of the game is not conducive for an obvious MVP candidate to stand out. The format doesn't allow for, like a strong storyline to build, Curry said. Through the semifinal games, Gilgeous Alexander, who scored 12 points on 5-for-5 shooting, including a clinching dunk to beat the Young Stars team 41-32, was the lead MVP contender for the Global Stars. And Damian Lillard, who scored 9 points on 3-for-5 shooting and ended it on a 27-foot pull-up three to win 42-35 over the Rising Stars, was in pole position for the OGs. Lillard, who won MVP last year by scoring 39 points for the East and going 11-for-23 from three, said that the award is more ephemeral now. Quote, "Anytime you're going to look at the MVP, you want to look at what jumped out," Lillard said. "In this type of format, nobody's going to have 50 points, or 30 points is even going to be hard to do unless you shoot it every time and make every shot. But you look at what jumps out. When was the crowd the loudest? What jumped off the floor? And that's probably who your MVP is going to be. So, watching the game, it was like, I'm pretty sure that Steph is going to win it. I don't know how many points he had. It couldn't have been that much, but I think that it was the eye test," unquote. Kyrie Irving, a fellow member of the OG's team, echoed Lillard's endorsement of Curry. Quote, "When he's in his hometown and playing in front of his home crowd, we all know what that means as an NBA player, as his peer, so we're not going to get in the way of that, man," unquote. Curry became the 15th player in league history to win All-Star MVP more than once, and the 17th player in league history to win the award when his NBA team was hosting the event. "The hosting experience was unbelievable," Curry said when asked about the Warriors welcoming the All-Star events in both Oakland and San Francisco. "I'm not going to complain about being tired or exhausted. This is an honor and a blessing to be able to celebrate and share this beautiful Bay Area that's been a part of my life for the last 16 years, and the basketball history and culture that's here, and the amazing fans that are here, and the impact that the game being here has had on both cities," unquote. And again, that feature entitled "Steph Curry Leads the OGs to the Title and Wins All-Star Game MVP," written by Dave McMenamin of ESPN. And next, let's read a short feature here on University of Arizona baseball. Headline reads, "The Cats Get Swept in Texas." This feature written by Michael Lev of the Arizona Daily Star. Arizona couldn't avoid the big inning. As a result, the Wildcats are headed home from Texas without a victory. Louisville completed number 21 Arizona's winless weekend on Sunday, defeating the Wildcats 13-1 on the final day of the Shriners Children's College Showdown in Arlington, Texas. The Cardinals scored 8 runs in the 5th inning, all with 2 outs, and added 5 more in the 8th inning. On Saturday, number 15 Clemson scored 7 runs in the 1st inning and 8 in the 9th inning in a 16-5 win over the U of A. Arizona went 3 wins, no losses in this tournament in Chip Hale's debut season in the year 2022. The Wildcats now enter their home opener Tuesday afternoon versus New Mexico, seeking their first victory of the season. Arizona last lost an opening weekend series in 1994. They started two wins, two losses in 2016 and 2021, the last two times the Wildcats reached the College World Series. Arizona held a 1-0 lead entering the top of the fifth inning thanks to Mason White's second home run of the season and brilliant pitching by freshman right-hander Smith Bailey. Making his college debut, Bailey allowed three hits and struck out five in four scoreless innings. He threw 40 of 53 pitches for strikes and did not walk a batter. But Bailey was on a pitch count, and the game changed when he exited. Louisville plated eight runs off of transfer Michael Hilker, a rally that began with White's throwing error. White's home run was the 31st of his career, tied for 10th all-time in U of A annals. That blast in the top of the first inning was the Wildcats' lone hit. After losing 2-1 in the season opener versus Ole Miss, Arizona was outscored 29-6. And again, that feature was entitled Cats Get Swept in Texas, written by Michael Lev of the Arizona Daily Star. And that's all the time that we have for this reading of Sports Today. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.